So let's just have a look at this passage together in John 21. Just go through it verse by verse very briefly, just some observations really to encourage us and bring things together at the end of Easter Day. So we see that after this, Jesus had revealed himself again to the disciples. This is verse 1, by the Sea of Tiberias, and revealed himself in this way. So after this, after what? Well, after these other resurrection appearances, Jesus does it again. He comes to reveal himself to seven of his disciples. It's a really fascinating scene. I suppose all of the scenes in the Gospel are fascinating, and I suppose certainly the post-resurrection scenes are quite remarkable in many ways. But Jesus has appeared now a couple of times to his disciples, and to prove and to contextualize that which we were thinking about this morning, this idea that we just don't have a compartment in our brain for resurrection. Jesus comes to show that he really has been risen from the dead. He really is alive. That's the point of him appearing, isn't it? And when we get to this point in John 21, this appearance on the beach, now at this point, the disciples are convinced. Even Thomas, doubting Thomas, is now convinced that Jesus is alive. You can just flick back to John chapter 20. Just notice verse 24. You know the story. Thomas says there halfway down, verse 25, "Unless I see in his hands the mark of the nails and place my finger into the mark of the nails and place my hand into his side, I'll never believe." And then 8 days later, verse 26, his disciples were inside again and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands, and put out your hand and place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe." Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." My Lord and my God. So now the disciples have begun to formulate this category for resurrection. Jesus has spent his previous teaching before the cross telling them about, and now he's appearing to them to orchestrate and prove that he really is alive again. And so what Jesus needs to do now is equip the disciples with the things that before his death were too hard for them to understand. Do you remember on a couple of occasions Jesus said that, you know, these things are hard for you to understand, but you will understand? You can go back to chapter 13 of John's Gospel. Just flip back to chapter 13, verse 7. Jesus is washing the disciples' feet, and he says in there, verse 7, "What I am doing, you do not understand now, but afterward, you will understand." So after I've risen again, these things will make sense to you. And there's a number of occasions, and different gospel writers present the disciples, don't they, with various degrees of intelligence, some of them much more sympathetic than others. But Jesus says, you know, there's a lot you don't understand, but you will. And we saw that this morning as well, didn't we, as we were looking at the resurrection account, chapter 20, verse 9, "Even as they peer into the empty tomb, Peter and John, it says, as yet they didn't understand the scripture that he must rise from the dead." The point is, now they do. Now they're getting there and beginning to understand. They're beginning to get this. So Jesus needs to equip them with these things, these truths that were previously too hard for them to understand. What was previously incomprehensible is now comprehensible. Maybe sometimes we look as Christians at some of our family, friends, colleagues, and we think it's incomprehensible that they would ever become a believer. But yet we see people all the time who, once we thought it was incomprehensible, now we can comprehend the reality that Jesus has touched their lives in a transforming way. And maybe you can look at your own life, as I can look at mine, and think, it would have been incomprehensible for me were it not for the grace of God poured out on me in the first place to think that I am now a Christian. It's incomprehensible, but in the light of the resurrection, the incomprehensible becomes comprehensible, doesn't it? It becomes real, it becomes understandable. So Jesus is appearing. Have you noticed as well, when you've been reading the post-resurrection accounts, well, in the past, if you've read them, if you've been reading them over Easter perhaps, the way Jesus is with his disciples is also slightly different as well, isn't it? Whereas before, he was obviously with them always. He was mingling with them. He would go and eat meals with them. He would spend long periods of time with them. Now it's is different. Jesus has been glorified now, hasn't he? He's on his way to heaven. That was the case. We saw that strikingly again this morning when Lucretia was reading the scriptures for us. And Mary comes and just is recognizes Jesus. In verse 16 of chapter 20, Jesus said to her, Mary, she turned and said to him in Aramaic, Rabboni, which means teacher. Jesus said to her, do not cling to me, for I've not yet ascended to the Father, but go to my brothers and say, I'm ascending to the Father. I imagine there were times when Jesus' friends would just cling on to him. Just so glad Jesus is here. Be here, Jesus. And now it's different. Don't cling on to me, Mary, because it's not the same now as it was. I've risen. I've got my resurrection body. I'm on my way to heaven. And when Jesus appears to the disciples, he's sort of there and then he's not there. He doesn't hang around. He doesn't hang out with them anymore in the way he used to. The account we're looking at just now is a little bit different. He does eat with them and he does spend time with them, but we'll go through and see that. But generally speaking, Jesus is different because he's got his resurrection body, his glorified body, and yet the disciples are still on earth. It's not that they're not still his friends. It's not that he doesn't love them as much now. It's just that he belongs to eternity now, and we're still in the temporal, the now. And one day as Christians, we'll be there in our resurrection bodies, in our glorified bodies, with him, like him. And that's going to be fascinating. But we're here now, aren't we? Jesus is in heaven, and we've got the Holy Spirit with us to help us and to counsel us and to be our energizer, if you like, God in us, the Spirit of God, God the Holy Spirit, the third person of the Trinity. But we're here, and Jesus is in heaven. And it was that case for the disciples and for the women. You can't hold on to me. It's not the same now as it previously was. Think about this from the disciples' perspective as well. This is a really odd period of time for them. This must have been so strange for them to comprehend. I mean, just go back to Mark's gospel. Go back to right at the beginning of Mark. Mark chapter 1, verse 16. And 20. Jesus comes along. He's starting his ministry, and he calls out to these fishermen, and he just turns their world upside down. Let me just read Mark 1, 16 to 20. Passing alongside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and Andrew, the brother of Simon, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And Jesus said to them, follow me, and I will make you become fishers of men. And immediately they left their nets and followed him. And going on a little farther, he saw James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, who were in their boat mending the nets. And immediately he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired servants and followed him. So Jesus comes up to these working men just about their business, and he says, come and follow me. And they do. They can't not but follow Jesus. And their whole world is turned upside down. But they've had 3 years now to get used to that new normality. And then Jesus goes and dies. And they don't have this understanding of what that means. And so their world has been devastated that first Easter weekend. And now they're in this sort of period of uncertainty again. Jesus is alive again. We're just getting our heads around that. But what an odd time it must have been for them. They're in a sort of holding pattern almost at the moment. They know that they're at the command of the Lord, don't they? They know that Jesus has got work for them to do, but what does that look like? What's it going to look like? What's the next step? We just don't know. So we find the disciples in chapter 21 back on familiar grounds. We find them back with that which is comforting and real to them, fishing. Not fishing for men, but fishing for fish in their boats with their nets. They're uncertain and they've withdrawn back to comfortable territory. It's quite a familiar thing, isn't it, to do when we aren't sure what to do, when we aren't certain where we're going. We'll come back to that which is familiar, which is cozy, which is secure, which is safe. Sometimes we're brave and we step out and we boldly go where Jesus tells us to go. You see what I did there? We boldly go. And then other times, then it all becomes a bit confusing and a bit muddy and we just withdraw and go go back to perhaps where we are in uncertain times. They're back on their ordinary grounds, ordinary fishing. And you get the sense that Simon's just sort of saying here in verse 3, it's as if he's saying to the other men, look, we can't just carry on waiting. Let's get on. Let's go. I'm going fishing. I'm just going to go out and do what we know. We don't really know yet what Jesus wants us to do. We know he's got something for us to do, but let's just get on with life. Let's just move on with life until we hear from him. We can't hang around. And the others agree and follow. It says there in verse 3, we will go with you. And they went and got into the boat. I think there's a real lesson there for us, isn't there? That when we're just doing ordinary things, when we're in periods of uncertainty, what does Jesus say to do? Get on with your life, worshipping him. Worship while you wait. Seek his will, seek his face. I don't think the disciples were not worshipping and not seeking at this point, but they got on with life. And as we get on with life, as we're wondering what next, we worship our God, don't we? So they're now out in the boat. It says then there at the end of verse 3, they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. They caught nothing. So they're on familiar ground. They're on the beach. Then they're in the boats, back in their comfort zone. But they go out into the boat. They spend the whole night out on the lake, waiting for a catch, but nothing comes. Nothing comes. And now it's getting light, and it's time to stop fishing. And they start rowing back. I would imagine they're pretty downhearted. Man, we can't even fish anymore. We can't even do what we're good at anymore. This is rubbish. You can sense that despair, that frustration. When you're in a low place as a Christian, you get that, don't you? Even the things I'm meant to be trained in or whatever, I just can't even do that right. But Lord, why are you silent? Why are you so quiet at the moment? Will you just tell us what to do? We can't even remember how to fish. But on the shore, there is a stranger. Verse 4, just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore. But look at this. The disciples didn't know that it was Jesus. It's interesting, isn't it? This goes back to this glorified body idea. Do you remember Mary didn't recognize Jesus? She thought he was the gardener. There's the two on the road to Emmaus. They don't recognize Jesus. I mean, you kind of look, I often think, why? You know, they're walking along the road. Jesus is talking to them. They don't recognize who he is. And it's the same here. Yeah, of course it's dawn, so it's hard to see out, but they don't recognize Jesus. He's different now. He's different now. The disciples probably assume this is somebody come to buy fish. This is what would happen. People would come down, tradesmen, marketeers would come down early in the morning at dawn to get the best of the catch and to get the fish, so that they could take it back and sell. I think that's still how it works these days. I remember watching an episode of The Apprentice, and all the contestants were sent out into one of the markets in the East End to go and get all the fresh fish so that they could sell it and make a profit for Alan Sugar later that day. And they had to be up at 3 a.m. to get to the market to get the fish that had been brought in to the wholesalers at 4 o'clock while it was fresh. And so they would have seen this man, probably thought, yeah, it's a guy that wants some fish. He's come as a trades person. It's nothing unusual at all. And sometimes people will come just wanting one fish, just to cook breakfast. We just need a fish. Have you got any fish? Anyway, this man who is Jesus, but they don't recognize, says in verse 5 to them, children, do you have any fish? That word children, it is a colloquial phrase. It could mean guys. Guys, have you got any fish? Lads, have you got any fish? Just that kind of idea. But what a question to have to answer, these experienced fishermen. And some tradesperson wants to do business, and there's no business to be done. Have you got any fish? And it just says they replied, no. No, we haven't got any fish. No, that's all they needed to say, as if it needed rubbing in any more. And yet this stranger has the audacity to say to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat and you'll find some. And John hasn't told us what they thought. And so we're probably not meant to, well, we're not meant to know what they thought, but preacher's license here, I just have in my mind. I mean, they must have just looked at each other and thought, who's he telling? We've just been out all night. Why would he tell us to go back and cast the nets on the other side? We know how to fish. We're the fishermen. You're the marketeer. But John says they did it. They obeyed. And they cast it in. And now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. And so the disciples, out of hope, perhaps do as Jesus says. They obey him. And they get this reward, this huge quantity of fish. And then they realize that it's Jesus. Or at least John does. Verse 7, the disciple whom Jesus loved therefore said to Peter, it's the Lord. It's the Lord. And again, when Jesus does things that are familiar, people recognize his hand at work, don't they? We need to be looking for what Jesus is doing, don't we, in our lives. So when circumstances come and happen and opportunities arise, we're ready and equipped to say, as his people, it's the Lord. I recognize the fingerprints of Jesus. This has got the fingerprints of Jesus all over it. We better do what he says. We better be ready for that. So they recognize Jesus. Of course, Jesus has told the disciples to try again when they've been out fishing before. So these little reminders, these little pictures of the past are all coming back to them. Simon Peter, it says there at the end of verse 7 or halfway through, Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, does what Simon Peter typically does. He kind of gets overexcited. He put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and he threw himself into the sea. He throws himself into the sea, leaving the other six men, verse 8, in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far off land, but about 100 yards off. You know, they're not far away, but they're far enough away for this to be the need of them, all the men to be working. But Simon Peter's jumped over the edge of the boat, and he's sort of hurtling himself towards Jesus. He's so excited. Again, I think there's a bit of humour in there from John as he narrates this from the perspective of being in the boat. Let's get in the, you know, this is quite mildly amusing, really. Typical Peter. He's great, we love him, but he's off. Then we get to the scene on the beach, verse 9, and we begin to focus in. The lens narrows in on Jesus. Look at verse 9 and 10. When they got on the land, they saw a charcoal fire in place with fish laid out on it and bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish that you have just caught. So Jesus is there, he's already got some fish. That's interesting. It's another sermon, perhaps. But he's got some fish, and then he says, you know, fish you've caught, let's use that as well. Let's bring those in and put it on the fire as well. But Jesus is there. He's all prepared for his friends. Even though he's risen and glorified, he's all ready and prepared. Jesus is still serving the disciples. He's still serving them. The Son of Man came not to serve, but to give his life as a ransom for many. And yet, we see Jesus serving so often. That wasn't the main reason he came. He came to die, and here he is, having died and risen again, and he's still serving his friends. He's still serving his friends. Verse 11, Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore. So Simon makes up for the fact that he'd legged it earlier. He now, on his own, goes and hauls the net ashore, full of large fish, 153 of them. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. Again, another sermon in that phrase, the net was not torn. But for now, there's a lot of fish, and all of them, not one of those fish, has been lost. Verse 12, Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. What a wonderful invitation. And as we come around the table in a moment, one of the things I want to focus us on is just the amount of times Jesus invites his followers, his friends, to come and eat with him. To come and eat with him. To come and have a meal. And we're going to come around the table in a few moments. And this scene here is on the beach. They're sitting on the sand, on the shore. Maybe Jesus has put a cloth on the floor as well. I don't know, but there's a fire going, and there's fish cooking on the fire.
And Jesus just once again makes that invitation. Come and dine with me, friends. Come and eat at my table. Come and be blessed as you sit at my table. And so they go over, and it says, no, none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. But they want to, you know, you can sense, we want to know who you are, but our eyes are showing us the evidence. It's just got to get from our eyes into our brain, into our hearts, because we know it's the Lord. We recognize you, Jesus. But none of them dared ask him. And so verse 13, Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and so with the fish. There's this whole thing going on here where Jesus is reassuring his frightened friends. He's reassuring them, he's providing for them, and he's serving them, even though he's now risen and glorified. He still provides, reassures, and serves. I met up with a friend in the week, Graham, who's the pastor at DC3. We had a coffee together. It's not DC3 anymore, we have to call it Hope Church now. It's changed its name. I keep getting into trouble with that, but we know it as DC3. And he was just telling me where his Easter studies had been and what he'd been looking at. And he'd had this same idea about Jesus eating and dining with his friends. And in fact, he'd been preaching a series through Meals with Jesus, I think he was saying. And he's just observed, and I thought this was really helpful. Whenever you see Jesus sit down and eat with people, whether it's the 5,000, the feeding of the 5,000, whether it's when he had the Last Supper, or whether it's an occasion like this, or the Emmaus Road, we have this pattern, and this is how Graham put it. He says, we see this pattern where Jesus blesses people, breaks bread, and gives grace. Blessing, breaking, and giving. And that's going on here. There's this provision, this blessing of Jesus. And then he comes and he takes the bread. And we're not told here that he broke it, but usually that's what Jesus would do. He would break the bread and give it. It's obvious he does that, because he'd have that loaf. He'd give it out to them. He blesses, he breaks, and he gives to his confused and frightened and disappointed friends. And he does that so very often. We'll just explore that a little bit more in a minute as we come to the table. It says there in verse 14, this was now the third time that Jesus was revealed to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. Let's sing, shall we? Let's sing a song. Thank you for saving me.